and welcome to Original Lines, where we talk to original people with original ideas about the creative life. I'm your host, Laura Allen, and today I'll be speaking with Arlene Williams. Arlene is the author of a number of books from memoir to fiction. Her latest project is a re-release of three novels in the Alki trilogy. Welcome, Arlene.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, so kind of how did you get started writing?
Oh boy, that's a long story. my sister was murdered. I guess plain and simple, I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. And it was an unsolved case for over 20 years. And I was pretty much a mess. And I did some counseling. I wasn't helping. At one point, my husband said, you know, you've talked about writing all your life. Why don't you write? Mm-hmm. And I'd always journaled. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking at just different options. Didn't really want to go back into academia. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to get a PhD or whatever. Through the University of Washington Extension Program, mm-hmm. there was a course on memoir writing. And in the description, it said something about turning journals into memoir. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I can do that.
Right.
And I went to the orientation, spoke with one of the professors who was Jack Remick, and thought, okay, I can do this. And it was a year-long program, and I thought I was just writing to write.
Right.
And I started really looking into what had happened to my sister and the dynamics around her death. And by the middle of the year, I was, you know, the two teachers said, you've got a story here, finish it. Uh-huh. Long story short, I eventually published the 39th Victim is the name of that book. And then I just kept writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like that.
Well, was there some point in this journey where you actually like switched over from I'm doing this for myself to I could actually be a writer where I'm going to write other stories for other people? Do you remember a moment?
Not really. It was really more of, it was very difficult to make the decision to publish that book. I knew that I was breaking every sort of code of behavior within my family dynamic, my first family. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that if I didn't, I was censoring myself. Because it's one thing to write, and it's another thing to give voice to that writing and to have an audience, mm-hmm. and to share. You know, one of the way that Jack and Bob, the two teachers, taught me to write was through timed writing practice, where we sit down and it used to be Luisa's Cafe. It's gone now. We go to Vio's now in Ravenna twice a week and sit down and put pen to paper for 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so when the 39th Victim was at the point where I was editing and preparing for publication, I never stopped writing. And as an ESL teacher working with immigrants and refugees for 30 years, there were just so many other stories, mm-hmm. that I wanted to write. And so, I don't know, I just moved into fiction, sort of, without really thinking about it. And suddenly, you know, I had the first novel, uh-huh. and I never really thought about writing a trilogy. It was just, I loved the characters, and I didn't want to let go of them, and started a second one, and then I ended up with a trilogy. But no, I never really thought about moving from writing. I mean, obviously there's a clear distinction between journal writing and writing for an audience.
Right.
But with memoir, it was so personal. I don't know, it just seemed to change on its own, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, I do remember having a mountain of papers, you know, of scenes and just a mess.
Right.
And going to a friend's cabin for 4 days, I think it was 4 days, and just laying this stuff out everywhere and literally with the scissors and tape, because I forgot to take my printer, right?
Right.
So with scissors and tape, I was figuring out what scenes were, you know, how to piece this thing together. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of time, you know, floating from present to past, mm-hmm. in the memoir. So
it sounds like the main distinction would be like from moving toward you're not really thinking about an audience. You're thinking about writing just, you know, the journal writing, whatever, toward you actually start thinking about your audience. Was that a difficult shift to make, or was it similar? Do you actually think about your audience when you're writing?
I'm sitting here thinking, do I really?
Some people don't. I mean, some people don't really.
I don't really think I do, and I'm embarrassed to say that, but I'm not. I mean, I took this year-long course, but I don't feel like I'm a professionally trained writer. You know, I don't have an MFA. I didn't go to any of the, you know, fancy schools or whatever. And I suppose they teach you to think about audience first. But honestly, I just feel like if I have a story, and I, for every book so far, I've had a story that needed to be told, at least in my opinion, it needed to be told. And I could see it, particularly with the novels. It's like I can close my eyes and I just see the story like a film in my mind. And that's the way it ends up on the page. I'm sorry if it feels selfish that I don't think about an audience. But
no, I honestly, two things. I think it splits. There are some authors who do think about their audience, and then there are some who say they never think about their audiences from my experience. And the fracture is not along MFA lines or whatever. It's just some people are different. Some people are like, this, I'm going to write this here the way I want it. And then if we have to clean that, you know, in the editing process, we can edit or whatever. Or some people, and it almost, I would say the line falls out more with the people who do the pre-plotting. You know, like they actually have the diagrams and like it will do plot points and like draw and basically storyboard the entire thing out. This is that type of mentality. I think it's more along the lines of what type of mentality you are than what degrees you have or whatever.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't mean to sound like I'm slamming it. I sort of think of Isabel Allende saying that when she wrote her first book, I remember her saying when she first started doing readings, people would ask her about structural things in the book. And she was like, well, I don't know, it just came to me. It's just a story I had to tell. It started out as a letter to her grandfather.
Yeah. Another thing I'd like to ask you kind of about process is another thing I hear from other writers is about rhythm. They kind of talk about the rhythm of writing in their lives. You have sort of a production rhythm. You know, it's like this is the time to write, and then there's this editing, and there's the waiting, and then there's the idea, and it sort of falls into a pattern and a rhythm. Do you have a kind of a set rhythm?
It certainly isn't planned.
Right.
I try to write every, when I say write, I mean fresh words, pen in hand, in my notebook. I try to do that every day. I don't always succeed, and sometimes it ends up being journal rather than scene work. But, you know, it's an exercise, like any other exercise, physical or mental. And I feel like I need to be doing it on a daily basis or I lose it.
Right.
But there is no doubt that when you're going through an editing process, which is what I have been doing for the past number of months, it's hard for me to be focusing on a new memoir, a new piece of work, while I'm still editing an old piece of work. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The rhythm is tough to, it's hard to find the balance.
Right. How is your writing? It sounds like your writing exercise, your discipline, and the act and the fact of that. How does that fit into the rest of your life? Did you have a hard time fitting it in at first, or was it just something you were so determined to do? You just dropped it in, and that was.
You know, it's funny because I'm a teacher, and I complain all year long, and you know, my friends and family will say, you know, I'm constantly complaining during the school year, that the academic year, that I don't have enough time to write, because I need to get up at 5:30 if I'm going to do it. But then summer rolls around and I have so much time on my hands that I don't follow the same strict rhythm or same strict schedule, I guess. So it's kind of funny, really. I mean, I don't, at some point, I'm going to have to figure out how to structure my time more carefully when I'm not working, when that day eventually comes, when I'm not doing the other job. But I'm a morning person when it comes to writing. So I inevitably get up, get that first cup of coffee, and sit down and try and put pen to paper and do that before I turn on the computer, check email, do any of that stuff. And then take what I've handwritten. I mean, in an ideal world, take that handwritten work and immediately plug it into the manuscript.
Right.
And then do that day after day. And a story emerges.
Right. So you prefer handwriting first, for the most part?
I do, especially if it's brand new. I mean, if I'm rewriting something, no. And inevitably, when I take what's handwritten and type it in, you know, obviously it changes radically. So that's the first process of reshaping a little bit. But somehow the ideas just flow. They just flow better when I do it pen to paper. Not sure why, but maybe just from a lifetime of journaling or something. I know there's some who believe there's a different kind of connection with the brain when you're using your hand. I'm not sure.
For me, it is. Any of the writing I do, I do a handwritten first. And I think there's something tactile about it for me that also does engage the same or a similar part of my brain that I use when I'm painting or when I'm drawing. So I don't get the same... I don't get the same result if I just type first. So,
yeah, I find even if I'm just writing a personal note to somebody, I tend to sit down with my notepad and jot it out first because, I don't know. It's just, it feels better. And I go I always have a notepad with me. So that if something comes to me, I sit down and start writing.
Well, speaking of your teaching job, you teach English as a second language, correct, at local college?
Yes.
How does that play into your writing? Does that feed your writing? It seems to me,
absolutely. Certainly the three novels that I have out now, the Elkhai Trilogy, all of those stories are influenced in one way or another by students I've had recently or many, many years ago in Biking Uphill. Antonia is definitely based on someone I knew when I was 18 or 19. Definitely the teaching influences the writing.
Immigrants seem to be a theme in many of your stories. And I was reading in a different interview with you at Fiona's blog.
Oh yes,
I read that interview, but it was a really good interview. And and you were talking about another memoir that you're thinking about of your time as an immigrant in Mexico.
Yes,
so that would be very interesting to think about and tell the story from your own perspective as an immigrant. Is immigration and immigrant status a theme that you're interested in your larger life, or is it mainly just through your work and your writing, or?
I've always found lines to be very, very arbitrary, including borders. And when we look at the history of mankind and the movement of borders based on the power structures that are in control at any given time, it's hideous. It's, you know, we've divided up people, cultures, language groups. So I've always kind of considered borders as just this really man-made, and I do mean man-made, constructions that cause a whole lot of pain. And we see it every day. All you have to do is turn on the news and see it. I ended up going to Venezuela and Mexico when I was really young. Well, not really young, but in my late teens. I moved to Mexico with the intention of never returning. Back in 1979, I guess. And yes, I was an undocumented immigrant for almost 6 years, mm-hmm. 5.5 years. And at that time, you know, I could take a bus, eventually drive, once I had my own car, up to the border, walk across, come back the next day with a new tourist visa, sometimes come back the same day with a new tourist visa. I mean, it was a different world. A different world in terms of immigration, different world in terms of just technology, communications. My connections with my family were very, very limited because, you know, we didn't have things like computers and cell phones, and long-distance phone calls were out of my budgetary means, and so were flights home. So it was such a different world. And so I started looking at that, looking at immigration today and looking at my experiences, and how difficult it was even for me learning a new language and culture, thinking I wasn't going to ever come back. And I superimposed that on my students and the realization that most of them have no choice. Mm-hmm. They might think they will go back someday and maybe they'll be able to, but in many, many cases, they simply won't. Mm-hmm. The politics will make that impossible. Anyway, so I started working on the story. I started writing everything I could remember. Right. And it all came out of a conversation with a friend who has now passed, that we should write this book called The Ex-Mexican Wives Club, because we were, several of us were married to Mexican nationals, mm-hmm. for a short period of time. Long story short, as I start writing this thing, I realize that it's the women I knew that really shaped that period of my life, and how fascinating such a very short period of life, what a profound effect it can have on us. Mm-hmm. And so I started reaching out and trying to find all of these women that I knew, and I found most of them.
Wow.
And so I've been speaking with them. So it's turning into this big project.
It sounds fascinating. I can't wait to read it.
Well, now I'm thinking, and I'm playing with different structures, trying to figure out how I can tell the story of my husband. Always my best sounding board says, I think the story of reconnecting with all these women might be more interesting than the original story. And so now I'm thinking, well, I can interlace the two. Uh-huh. And so that's kind of what I'm playing with now, is the story of then and the story of now. So
interesting.
Yeah, well, long answer to a short question.
No, that's wonderful. Did you have to kind of put this on hold? I know that your latest project has been the re-release of the Alki trilogy.
Yes.
Of Running Secret, Spiking Uphill, and
Walking Home.
Yes. And so did that kind of take over your life for a little while?
Oh, big time.
What was that like?
Oh, it's just very strange. I mean, those books were originally published by Book Trope here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And then Book Trope went out of business a year ago, this spring. I signed with another small publishing company out of Texas. Mm-hmm. And for a year, not a lot was happening. And then they were very frank, saying marketing and selling books is really, really tough. And they have decided to focus on Texas authors, audiences. And it was frustrating. I feel like, I kind of let a year slip by. Mm-hmm. But then I made the decision. I mean, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because very few publishers are going to want books that have already been published, unless they were some, major success.
Right.
And so I made the decision to re-release them on my own, to self-publish. And that was an interesting and difficult decision. Mm-hmm. I think I needed for a long time the validation to that, someone else thought my work was good enough to put out in the world, and to make the decision that I think it's good enough.
Right.
But I did go through, so then I went through a long re-edit. I decided I was going to take the time and really clean them up. And then, fortunately, I had the help of a very good layout, interior layout person, and the gal who did the original covers was willing to update the covers. So yeah, they came out this month.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, it was pretty exciting to actually push that button and publish.
Right.
That was pretty wild.
So what have you found are the biggest differences between publishing with a small press and then doing the self-publishing? Is it mainly psychological, like you were talking about, the validation of having the or what were the differences?
I think they're both. I think it's emotional and technical. You know, you need, I think it's really important for people who are going to self-publish, it certainly was important for me, to know, I mean, I was in a good space in that because I was re-releasing these books. Uh-huh. I knew they had already gone through a complete round of editing.
Right.
And reviewing and editing and reviewing a number of rounds. So to do it one more time was not a huge, I mean, it was an endeavor, but I had the confidence that they were okay. They had already been out in the world. So that part of it, I think, is really important. Confidence that you have done, that I have done my very best work. And I've shown it to enough people to know that there aren't too many typos in it, hopefully.
Right.
But then there's the technical side. I certainly did not know how to do a layout for mm-hmm. CreateSpace, and I certainly did not know how to do a professional cover. And I was very fortunate having the connections with former people that I had worked with in Book Trope who were willing to continue, you know, that work. But I would certainly suggest that anybody who does decide to self-publish get a professional editor, a professional layout person, a professional cover designer, if they want a professional looking book.
Right.
So I think it's both. I think it's having the technical and also having the emotional confidence that you don't need that exterior validation.
Right.
Then there's the whole other question of going the traditional route, mm-hmm. you know, the agent, the big, is it still Big Five? I don't even know how many there are. Is it the Big Three now?
It's probably condensed, yes.
And I don't know. I mean, if I were 20 years old and starting out in the world, maybe I would want to try that angle. I have to say, I did contact, I don't know, 80-some agents for my first book, for The 39th Victim. Mm-hmm. And they simply weren't interested in mm-hmm. a book by a middle-aged writer with no track record mm-hmm. About a very emotional topic that right. they, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd try it. I mean, I won't try it again. I have no interest in going that route. But I'm not saying others shouldn't. You know, for some, I think it's perfectly viable, but it's a very, very slow process.
Yeah.
And a needle in the haystack, basically.
Right. So. Well, I think the climate's never been friendlier to independent publisher, you know, to small publishers, to self-publishing, mm-hmm. to that. I mean, it's so, every part of it from the beginning to end, you can find someone, you can reach out and connect with
sure.
someone that can help you with that part. And, you know, doing the promotion is it doing your own. How is your promotion going, by the way? Is that, do you like that part of things, or is that the part?
Not so much.
Okay.
This is okay.
Okay, cool.
I don't do as much of it as I should, mm-hmm. honestly. I mean, I keep my blog, but that's about. But you have to do that whether you go the traditional route anyway.
Right.
Unless you're one of the favored five or whatever that they pick each year to put all their money into.
Well, even now, I hear that one of the big complaints with new authors in the last 10 or 5 or 10 years is that they're expected to do most of that themselves anyway. Now,
right.
not that money. I mean, they'll, you know, there's money that goes into the big five marketing campaigns, but keeping a blog, doing social media, keeping all of that up, they're
right.
expected to do that anyway.
Right.
And readings and everything, I've talked to people that have been like, you just,
right.
it's just the amount of work they expect you to do, and then yet get it, you know.
But you better have that next book out.
Exactly. So,
well, and the other big difference, I think, and that that was really important for me, and frankly, probably why I decided to put the effort into self-publishing, is that, you know, if you go with the traditional publisher and a non-print-on-demand publisher, then not only do you lose all control over your work, but they put out a run of however many books they decide to put out a run of, and then they're gone. Then they disappear from the world.
Right.
Whereas with print-on-demand, with Amazon, I now know that my work will be in the world in some form or another, in ebook form and print form, for as long as I want it to be. And that's a very different, I think, approach than having someone else decide they're going to print 10,000 of them and then buy them back from the stores and burn them.
Right.
So ecologically, environmentally, I much prefer the idea of print on demand as well.
What kind of support did you have of the self-publishing? Did you have a group? Was there anyone in your writer's group that had gone the self-publishing route? Were you able to connect with people possibly? Or did you just have to kind of feel your way along?
I had already done some self-publishing before this. One of my writing partners and I, Pamela Hobart Carter, and I have self-published 12 little books, short books in easy English for new readers, for adults. And I have taught ESL at a college, you know, here in Seattle for 30 years. And I had often taught the very high levels, the right before English 101 levels. But then I decided, well, the division was going to do this thing where we all taught different levels. So I started moving from the highest level lower and lower and lower and lower. And which meant, of course, a lower reading ability. And in the intermediate levels, I used a tremendous amount of YA fiction. But as I kept going lower, I was getting into children's books. And I didn't want to use children's books.
Right.
Talking dogs and so forth. And so one day I was talking to Pam, and I was saying, you know, I really need books written at about a second grade reading level, divided into about 9 chapters for a 9-week quarter. And she says, oh, I can write one. And if she can do it, I can do it. So I wrote one, and before we knew it, we had 12 books.
Oh, nice.
And we self-published. So I was familiar with Create Space. And that helped a lot. And then, yes, I did speak with another writer who had worked with Adam, the layout designer, and said, you know, he laid out mine, he might do yours too, and that kind of thing. It was really the networking of who to reach out to for help. And that was very beneficial, yes.
So is that was that your only collaborative project? Was the one with the ESL books, or have you done other collaborative writing? I've always been kind of fascinated when people tell me they've done collaborative projects and how that works out.
No, that's really the only project we did together. Trying to think, but no. I mean, in a sense, when you sit down at a table with a dozen other writers and you're all writing totally different things, it's not collaboration, but it's certainly supportive. And so I always have that. You know, I always have Tuesdays and Fridays at Vio's Cafe, or I'm in another group on Sundays. That was a collaborative project. The Uptown Writers, we put out a book called Sunday Ink with pieces of all of our work. Gosh, a number of years ago, one of our members was dying of cancer and had not been published, and we decided we were gonna publish her. And so that was a wonderful collaborative project also. Not so much collaborative in the writing, but certainly in putting the collection together and putting it out in the world and doing a few group readings while Sandy was still with us. That was just a wonderful thing. So, yeah.
Do you normally enjoy readings? giving them? I mean,
well, I'm always terrified beforehand. Uh-huh. I enjoy reading orally. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoy the actual reading. I'm not as comfortable talking. You know, I feel like I need a script to know what I'm saying. I feel that way right now. But I like engaging with people about the stories. I enjoy book clubs. I've mm-hmm. gone to a number of book clubs, and that's always fun when women have read the novels or the books and really have questions and want to talk about them. I recently did one for Biking Uphill, and the discussion around immigration was just, it was really good.
Yeah.
You know, it was really dynamic. And I think what the Elkhai trilogy does, I hope it does, is allow people to think maybe a little bit differently about immigrants, about who these people are, mm-hmm. than the way they might think, either because of the press or because of just the differences. Mm-hmm. We are often uncomfortable around people and things that are different, and looking at difference as something interesting and exciting instead of something to fear mm-hmm. or condemn is, yeah. I like it.
Yes. It's always interesting talking with writers and artists who tend to be somewhat introverted. Mm-hmm. And they tend to, their main chosen for years, they've been working on making this choice to express themselves in either on paper or in, you know, on a canvas. This is their main, and then getting them to sit in an interview mm-hmm. and express themselves with words.
And to self-identify, to say, oh, yeah, I'm a writer. I'm an author. But it's that self-identifying that I find really interesting. People often ask me, well, you know, you teach, you stand in front of 30 students every day. How can doing a public reading make you nervous? And it's different. You know? Uh-huh. It's just different. And I think a lot of it has to do with, as a teacher, you're the teacher. You know, you have a role, you put on that mask, mm-hmm. and you do that role.
Right.
And as a new writer, you have to learn to stand up there as the author with the big A and do the reading. And it's interesting. It's a very, for me, it has been an interesting journey. I suppose, in all honesty, I still see myself as teacher first, then writer,
right.
Which is pretty silly, really, but it's just maybe the number of years one has dedicated to something.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, they've both been hugely important in my life, and they certainly do feed each other, play off each other. So I think what was the biggest shock was when I published my first book, because very, very few people knew of my sister's murder.
Mm.
And to come out with it, I mean, I really felt like I was coming out. Right. It was very strange, people's reactions, you know, their desire to express sympathy and sadness and discomfort and all of those natural feelings people have around death. And at the same time, be shocked that I had carried this secret for so long. That was really interesting. And the things people tapped into in the book, and still do, even with the novels, I think that's always interesting, how things I might include, like being the middle child,
mm-hmm.
that ended up being, you know, the most profound aspect for a particular reader. I thought, interesting. But it was because of that reader's own personal experiences. And I think that's really important, too, that readers take their personal experience into into the book, mm-hmm. just as they do when they're viewing a piece of art on a wall, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, why it's so interesting to do readings or book clubs or whatever, is to get that sort of what take on what engagement. They're taking, yeah, that engagement, what mm-hmm. they're taking away from the work that you've spent months and years creating.
Right. Well, do you think, just as far as I know it's not entirely about the healing process, I don't want to use the words healing process, but the process of getting your story out there and actually engaging with people outside your own immediate family about the story about your sister. Do you think that writing the book had the engagement that you just described with people afterwards had as big of an effect on you as actually writing the book? You think that was all part of one process of you engaging with the world with the story? I mean, it sounds like you...
I think it was just ongoing. So. Yeah, I think very much so. I think the writing was important. The research was important. I mean, like I said, it was a 20-year open case with 70 victims, 80 victims, I don't even know. And when my sister disappeared, I was living in Mexico. And by the time I packed up, ended my life there, came back here... And it was just that need to be here in Seattle with family. And but it was very odd because we weren't a family that talked a lot. And I really had to do research when I started writing the book. I had to do research. I had to really figure out what had happened on the police side with the case, all of that. And then also delve into my own memories of family in order to make sense of the murder. But yes, I do believe that both the writing and then the publishing, giving voice again to the story, was my way of honoring my sister's memory. Now, not everyone would agree with that particular way of honoring her memory, but for me, it was my way of saying, okay, I finally understand. And being willing to share that mm-hmm. openly without feeling like I had to hide behind this horrible secret. So, so both are important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting to hear you talk about how much that after the fact engagement, the talking with the people, the readings. I was just at the Auburn Literary Festival and talked with 10 or 12 people there about. You're very briefly about what their favorite, what they loved about being, you know, why are they here and why are they so, but almost to a person, that's what they said. They loved engaging with readers, yes. You know, and these are people that also either small presses with a few authors there, or it was people that had self-published or had their own. So it was a broad spectrum of publishing styles and writing styles, mm-hmm. but almost to a person, they said, I love talking with readers. I love hearing and talking with people, reactions to my books. And that ongoing conversation, it's almost like the writing was just one phase, in some ways was one phase of a conversation that they're having with the world.
Right. I think so. I mean, I think that's, we start out creating art, I think, for ourselves. But if that's where it stops and nobody ever sees it, you know, it's the tree in the forest. I mean,
right.
did it ever really happen at all? It's certainly important for oneself, but the engagement is with the readers. And it's not economics. You know, it's not, oh, well, I'm going to get engaged with readers so I sell more books. That's not what it's about. Not mm-hmm. for, certainly not for me. Mm-hmm. It's something a whole lot more meaningful than that. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
when we want readers, it's for that kind of engagement.
Yeah.
And for the engagement that I hope is going on between that reader and someone they're talking to and telling about, yeah, I read this story about this guy who, whatever, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we can get close to wrapping things up.
Okay.
But is there a topic that you don't think we've covered that you'd like to?
Well, the only thing, other thing that I would like to mention mm-hmm. is that memoir, The 39th Victim, and a second one that's already written but has never been published,
mm-hmm.
will be coming out in one way or another at the end of this year or early next year. I have submitted a query, so I don't want to self-publish until I give that query an appropriate amount of time to be considered.
Right.
But should that small press not be interested, then I will be moving forward and self-publishing while re-releasing The 39th Victim and publishing a new memoir titled Moving Mom.
Okay.
Either the end of this year or early next year.
Okay. Well, good. Let us know when that comes out, and I'll publish an update on the blog. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well, Arlene, this has been an excellent conversation. Thank you very much for talking.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah. This has been fun.
Let me ask you, where, if people want to know more about you or find your books, where can they find you?
On my website, which is at ArleneWilliams.com, and Arlene is A-R-L-E-E-N, the Gaelic spelling, not the British spelling, ArleneWilliams.com. And I do have an author page on Amazon, and my books are on Amazon, both print and ebook, or the novels are now there.
Okay.
You can reach me through my blog.
Okay, great. And well, thanks again, and this has been Laura Allen for Two Ponies Press. Check out all the past episodes of Original Lines on your favorite podcast service, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Pod Directory. Or you can listen to us direct from our website, www.twoponiespress.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.